This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, January 11th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. One of the biggest challenges for getting more electric vehicles on U.S. roads? Giving people a place to charge them. Not everyone has a garage or parking spot where they can just plug in their car, and that's especially true in cities, like New York. On today's show, our energy reporter Jennifer Hiller joins us to explain how New York City plans to add more EV charging stations, and why it could be even more difficult and costly than you might think. That's after these headlines. Starting next month, Facebook and Instagram will no longer let advertisers place ads targeting teens based on gender. In a blog post yesterday, parent company Meta says it'll also ban advertising based on teens' user activity. It'll only use age and location to show ads to teens. The move comes as the social media giant faces pressure from European regulators over its ad policies. Meanwhile, the head of TikTok has met with EU officials to talk about how the company plans to comply with new rules coming into effect in the bloc. CEO Shou Chu and his team said the company is committed to ensuring they did more than is legally required, according to officials familiar with meetings. Another topic raised was TikTok's recent revelation that it fired employees after learning they improperly accessed the data of two journalists. A summary of the meeting issued by the European Commission's Vice President for Values and Transparency said Chu reiterated that the actions were wrong. Some crypto updates for you. Coinbase is laying off one-fifth of its staff, nearly 1,000 people, as part of broad cost cuts. Last summer, the crypto exchange slashed its workforce by 1,100 people. Yesterday, CEO Brian Armstrong said, despite everything the company and the crypto industry has been through, he remains optimistic about Coinbase's future and the future of crypto. A man convicted of what prosecutors say is the first cryptocurrency insider trading scheme was sentenced to 10 months in prison yesterday. He pleaded guilty last year to one count of conspiring to commit wire fraud after admitting to profiting from confidential information that federal prosecutors say it came from his brother, who at the time worked for Coinbase. His brother, the ex-Coinbase employee, has previously pleaded not guilty to four counts of fraud and conspiracy charges and is awaiting trial. A friend of the brother's was also charged in the alleged scheme last summer and remains at large, according to prosecutors. An update on the FTX bankruptcy. The company's new management is asking that charitable donations made by FTX when its fortunes were high be returned. As of September, FTX's primary charitable arm, Future Fund, had pledged more than $160 million to more than 110 nonprofits, according to its now-defunct website. But now, FTX's new management is asking for the money back, leaving nonprofits, some of whom have already spent the money, struggling to decide what to do. Our reporter Eric Wallerstein has more.
From the bankruptcy lawyers I spoke to, it really revolves around solvency. And the courts will try and determine, when did FTX become insolvent? And did you receive money during that time when other creditors had a claim to that money? There's a big question mark for a lot of people right now is, was FTX a Ponzi scheme? If it's legally declared that, then any donations would have to be clawed back or could be legally clawed back because technically those weren't the rightful owners of that money. So it's a wait and see game for now, but there's a lot of different question marks still.
And the new Republican majority in the House plans to scrutinize communications between the Biden administration and big tech. They plan to look into whether there have been efforts by the administration to influence the content on platforms owned by companies such as Meta and Google, which owns YouTube. They're particularly interested in whether there was censorship of legitimate viewpoints on issues such as COVID-19 that ran counter to White House policy. A White House spokesman dismissed the effort, calling it a, quote, political stunt. Meta and Google parent Alphabet declined to comment. All right, coming up, charging up for a green future means finding more places to put electric vehicle chargers. But where do you do that in dense urban areas like New York City? We'll discuss after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm you share something with, listening. They take the time to understand you and your business so you get the best solution, not more noise. Start a conversation at gt.com.
The state of New York plans a major shift to boost the number of electric vehicles on its roads. Here's Governor Kathy Hochul at the New York International Auto Show last year.
Finally, we stopped this war between our vehicle transportation and an assault on the environment with leaning hard into electric vehicles. And that is why by the year 2035, 100% of new vehicles sold in the state of New York will be zero emissions. We are leading the nation, my friends, and it's starting right here in the state of New York, and I'm very, very proud of that.
New York's plan to ban gas vehicles follows a precedent set by California to do the same, with the aim of cutting greenhouse gas emissions. But one particular challenge for New York will be drivers in New York City, where many people rely on street parking, and there aren't all that many places to put charging ports. With me to talk about this is WSJ Energy reporter Jennifer Hiller. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I want to just start by laying out the scale of this challenge. I mean, can you tell us how many drivers now in New York City have electric cars, and how many places are there to actually charge them?
So fewer than 1% of drivers in New York City have EVs. It's, 20-something thousand drivers. So it's a small share of the drivers that are out there. And there's also not a lot of charging locations at this point. There's about 1,300 pieces of equipment out there that would be available to all kinds of EV drivers to public charge over a period of several hours. And then there's about 74 fast chargers. And that's coming from state data and from the Department of Energy, which tracks EV chargers, and from Atlas Public Policy, which is an EV data company.
Okay, so they're going to need a lot more chargers to meet this, change that New York is hoping to get when it stops allowing the sale of new gas-powered vehicles. And Jennifer, full disclosure, I lived in New York City. I had a car when I lived in New York City, which I had to park on the street, as most people there do. It's hard to imagine where I would have charged it if it was electric. Where are they planning on putting these chargers?
Right. The city estimates they have an enormous need for public chargers just because of the thing that you mentioned. Most people in New York are parking on the street. They don't have dedicated garage spaces where they can leave their cars overnight. And so in New York, probably more so than any other city in the U.S. by far, you need a lot of public chargers available to people. And so those are going to be in parking garages. You're also going to have them essentially out on the street. They're looking at doing a lot of curbside charging in neighborhoods. And the idea being that if they put enough curbside chargers out there, that people will be able to find a place to plug in during the day or overnight. But it is an enormous infrastructure build out that they are talking about doing. The city thinks it needs about 40,000 slower chargers, which are the kind that maybe you plug in over a period of, 6-8 hours or more. And they want about 6,000 fast chargers. So that is just a far cry from what exists right now in the city.
Jennifer, real estate in New York is so expensive. How do they plan to get the space to install these chargers?
Yeah, that's one of the big challenges for people who are developing these sites. Real estate is costly and expensive, and New York is not an easy city to build in or to add any kind of infrastructure. So the permitting process can be complicated. You have to go through a process with the utility as well, and that can be complicated. And so, New York is an expensive place to add this kind of equipment. There is a lot of state money on the table. There is a lot of federal money on the table that can help offset some of the cost of installing this kind of equipment. But it is not by any stretch of the imagination an easy thing for people to build right now. It takes a lot of electricity industry expertise, and it also takes a lot of real estate industry expertise to get a project like this done. I think especially on the fast chargers, which require quite a lot of power. You know, a large fast charging site can draw as much power as a skyscraper. So it's not just adding a few pieces of equipment and plugging them into the existing system and you're done. You're talking about utility upgrades that need to happen as well.
Right. Where is all that extra power going to be coming from?
So some companies are essentially drawing it from the buildings that are already there because the power system for the building exists. And depending on, you know, how you manage the charging and you manage the power use of the building, there might be enough power there already. Otherwise, you know, it's coming from the grid. And so that could be an issue over the years as you start to add more and more chargers in New York or in cities across the country, that it's a new use of electricity that we don't have right now on that kind of scale. You know, most experts seem to think that with managed charging, you will be fine and that there is enough power there. But I guess time will tell and see if they run into any hiccups in adding this kind of equipment.
I imagine this isn't just a New York problem. Won't other cities face similar challenges when they try to make a shift towards more EVs?
Yeah, I think most of our, you know, large cities in the U.S. have dense urban cores. But I do think New York is unique in some ways. I mean, it is going to have far more people that are going to rely on public charging than other cities in the U.S. And you're just talking about like the kind of density that we really don't have anywhere else in the country, at least not on this scale. So it is unique a little bit in that way. It's hard to find kind of a one-to-one comparison for New York. But at the same time, the same things that New York is dealing with are the same issues that are going to play out in other cities across the country.
All right. That's our energy reporter, Jennifer Hiller. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. For more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Grant Thornton, a professional services firm that gets that cookie-cutter thinking doesn't cut it in today's tech industry. Grant Thornton listens first, tailoring solutions to evolve with your business, whatever comes next. More at gt.com.